Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by NatureBox. NatureBox delivers tasty snacks made with high-quality ingredients right to your door. NatureBox is offering Campfire fans 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/Jim. That's naturebox.com/Jim. Thanks, NatureBox. Jim Harold's Campfire is also brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/campfire and enter the promo code campfire. That's casper.com/campfire and enter the promo code campfire. Thanks, Casper.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the Campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you. And I'm still worn out from staying up all night watching the election turns this week, so the show is a few hours late. I apologize for that. But we're here. That's the important thing. And I think whether we were on the losing side or the winning side, I think everybody, specifically in the United States, needs some post-election therapy. We were just inundated on both sides with information and viewpoints and arguments. And now is the time maybe to step back and forget about all the politics and share some spooky campfire stories. And that's what we're here for. So, with no further ado, here it is, the campfire. Genevieve joins us from Illinois. She's been listening for about a year. And she's got a story about a home that she moved into several years ago and the strangeness that ensued. Genevieve, please tell us what happened to you and your family.
Well, it started about, I want to say it was about 5 years ago. Me and my ex-husband had moved into a home now. I have four children, one boy, three girls. And when we first moved into this home, we were technically renting. And I had the girls on the second floor. There was two bedrooms up there. And of course, me and my husband and my son stayed downstairs. Now, the first night, everything seemed to be going fine. But on the second night, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. We heard screaming, just loud screaming. And I wake up in a frantic going, oh my God, what's going on? And we rush upstairs and all of the girls were cornered in the back of one of the rooms and they were just crying and crying. We're like, okay, calm down. What's going on? And my oldest daughter, she goes, mommy, there's an old woman that was touching my head and she went over and touched their heads. And
oh,
she's pointing over into the back of the room. I'm like, oh, okay, this is a little strange. So I told him that everything's going to be okay. It was probably just an imagination. Just go lay back down. Well, this continued for about almost 3 months. This old woman was just going around throughout the house. We would see her from time to time. Didn't think much of it because I grew up in a haunted home. So I was kind of used to that sort of thing. And I just thought, hey, it's okay. She's not going to harm you. But then things started getting really bad. We started smelling really awful things throughout the house. It almost smelled like death in the house. And no matter how many times we cleaned it, it would just get worse and worse. Well, then there was the strange spots that would appear on the walls, and it almost kind of looked like black mold in a sense. And over there scrubbing it, and it's still in cloth. And there was almost like a clear ooze that would like come from the top of the ceiling. And I'm like, okay, this is just getting really strange. Well, fast forward about a couple of weeks after I started noticing this, I would wake up every morning and the furniture throughout the house was just kind of scattered and just in a disarray. So I'd have to go back, rearrange things. Still didn't think much of it, just kind of brush it off. Well, one night we were sitting down watching TV and we kept hearing this almost like a demonic voice coming through the television. And I was like, what the heck is that? So I grabbed my phone, I recorded it and I played it backwards. And as I heard it backwards, even my children heard it. It said, I'm going to kill you. And I'm like, okay, this is getting really bad.
that's a line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty scary. Well, then we started hearing these demonic voices coming through electronics that weren't even plugged in or even they were even turned off. And at this point, I kept telling my ex-husband, I was like, okay, we need to get a priest in here because there's something just not right with this. And we've been seeing this little woman, we've been hearing these demonic voices. And he's like, no, we'll just leave it alone for that point. Well, then the fires started. We started having random fires throughout the house. The first one started on the front porch.
Oh, my.
There was nothing there. And I kept seeing the smoke coming into the house because we had the door open at the time. And I run out there and I'm like, what the heck's going on? And next thing I know, there's just like a little ball of fire right on the porch and putting it out. Like, okay, that's really odd. Well, it got really bad because there was one night I was laying in bed just about to doze off. And then all of a sudden the whole room just started filling up with smoke. And I'm like, what the heck? And I'm just still kind of in a daze because I was really, really tired. And I thought, well, maybe it's just my imagination. Well, I ended up, like, it sounded like somebody was screaming at me, get up, get up, get up. So I sit up real quick and I couldn't even see an inch in front of my face. And I'm just freaking out trying to figure out where is the smoke coming from. So I open up a window and I remember that my daughter, who was only a month old at the time, was at the end of the bed in a bassinet. So I grabbed her out of the bassinet, put her on the floor. And as the smoke started to clear, I noticed that there was a small fire in the corner of the room where there was a fan. After we cleared everything out, we had examined this fan and there was the fire actually started in the center of the cord. I'm like, okay, that's weird. And had that checked out by an electrician. He goes, yeah, I can't quite explain that. That's just really strange. I've never seen anything like this before. Well, everything started getting really, really bad. There was objects being thrown at us. We would wake up in the middle of the night with these big dark figures standing over us. It felt like I was being choked at night when I was laying down. I kept feeling like this tightness around my neck. I'm like, oh my God, okay, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And I would freak out. My ex-husband, he's like, it's okay. It's okay. I'm like, no, this is not okay. It feels like someone's literally putting their hands around my neck and choking me. And it just kept progressing and progressing. We'll go to find out that we had done some research in the house right before we ended up deciding to finally leave the house. That there was a old woman that lived there, and it was her granddaughter and her granddaughter's boyfriend. They were only there for about 2 months, and one day the grandmother just disappeared. Nobody seen her because they would see her every day going out, you know, getting the newspaper, but they just stopped seeing her.
Right.
And there was one night where there was just a lot of commotion going on at the house. Next day they're packed up and they're gone. That was it. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe this is the old woman. I don't know. I can't speculate exactly what happened, but there was just a lot of negativity, a lot of bad things that happened in this house that nobody in my family could even explain. You know, there was one other instance where we had tried to do EVP because I was doing some reading about it, thinking maybe if we could make a kind of a connection,
right?
Maybe this would kind of help out the situation. So we walked upstairs after, you know, the kids were asleep and we had both of our phones out. We were just recording, trying to make contact. Well, as soon as we said, what is your name? Both of our phones, because me and my ex-husband had our phones out, they heated up to such a high amount. It almost felt like it was burning our hands. I dropped mine. He had his still in his hand. And I happened to look at his phone. I'm like, look what's happening to your phone. And he's looking down and he's going, oh my God. The screens on both of the phones had scrambled. It looked like an old TV signal. And I've never seen this before. And mine actually, it just completely shut off, but his was still on and it was scrambled. We couldn't do anything with it. And then that's when we felt this enormous cold rush over our bodies. And there was no AC on at the time. There was no fans running. And that's when I told him, okay, we need to get out of here. There's something bad about to happen because I had this horrible feeling that something was going to happen. So we go downstairs. And that's when we heard it sounded like feet running up and down the stairs. And it was pretty creepy. But it's just been a wild ride. And every time we ended up moving out of that house, every time I remind my children, I was like, do you remember that house on 38th Street? And they're like, yes, I'm so glad we don't live there anymore. I did not like that old woman. She scared me so much.
Well,
That's
got to be frightening as a mother. You know, it's one thing if you're in jeopardy, or even your husband's in jeopardy, you know, you're adults, you can handle yourselves, take care of yourselves. But one thing, start interacting with your kids. That's a whole new level.
And it is, because I felt very helpless. I couldn't protect my children the way I wanted to. And it was an unknown force. So it's like, I really had no idea how to even deal with it. And, you know, I've done a lot of reading on that while we were still living there. And I was like, okay, well, maybe if I try this or try that. But, you know, then of course, then you open other avenues and possibly letting other things in. And I was just like, no, can't do that.
Well, it's a very, very interesting story. And how has it impacted you?
Well, it's definitely opened my eyes quite a bit. I'm a lot more careful if I ever go to rent a home. I'm definitely, you know, digging on more information on a home. But, you know, it definitely has opened my eyes to a lot of possibilities, a lot of things out in the world that we just can't explain. And, you know, every time I hear somebody say, well, I don't believe in spirits or I don't believe in this, I'm like, well, you know what, if something happened, you know, you'd be changing your mind about that. And maybe you should be a little bit more open to, you know, the idea of something that we can't explain. But it was exciting on some level, because it gives me a way to, you know, kind of share my experience with people. But then at the same time, it's just terrifying thinking about it.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of the campfire and sharing your story tonight, Genevieve.
Oh, thank you so much.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by NatureBox. NatureBox delivers tasty snacks made with high-quality ingredients right to your door. Now, what do you do when you want to snack, but all you can find in the house is junk food? Well, do you rely on your immense self-control to resist the temptation of the junk? Well, I've been there before, and I can tell you 9 times out of 10, you'll eat the junk food. But there is a better way. Start snacking healthy with NatureBox. Now, NatureBox makes snacks that actually taste great and are better for you, created with high-quality ingredients that are free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners, so you can feel great about snacking. My personal favorites are the cashew crumble and the honey Dijon pretzels. My mouth is just watering thinking about it. And NatureBox, and this is an update, NatureBox recently made their service even better. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want, with no minimum purchase required, and you can cancel at any time. It's simple. Go to naturebox.com/Jim and check out their snack catalog. There are over 100 snacks to choose from, and they're constantly adding delicious new snacks. Choose the snacks you want, and they'll deliver them right to your door. No muss, no fuss. With NatureBox, you'll never get bored, and their new snacks every month inspired by real customer feedback. And if you ever try a snack you don't like, NatureBox will stand behind it. They're not afraid. They'll replace it for free. And right now, even better for Campfire fans, and you are one because you're listening, so you qualify. NatureBox is offering Jim Harold's Campfire fans 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/Jim. That's naturebox.com/Jim for 50% off your first order. 50%! You got to give this a try. Go over to naturebox.com/Jim. Snacking made better, made healthy, and my favorite, made delicious. Thanks, NatureBox. Another international caller, Jonathan, has been listening for 10 years. 10 years. He deserves an oak leaf cluster for that one. North London, he's calling us from. And he has a story about the spirit of a small boy. And actually, we'll talk about it. It led him to write a book about his experience, or at least a book kind of based on the situation. Jonathan, thank you for listening for all these years, and tell us about this spirit of this small boy and everything that happened.
Well, yeah, and first of all, I'll just tell you that for me, the paranormal is the everyday, and it's kind of the way I was brought up. So I was used to things happening. I mean, I've lived in places where, you know, you kind of had to move as you were walking up the stairs. You sort of moved instinctively to one side to let something past it. So to me, it was all normal. And I'd always heard things. I'd never seen them, but I'd heard them. And I always knew when it was supernatural and not supernatural. So I was kind of used to things. But I'd moved to a new house. And it's a small house in North London. And it's it kind of felt, it felt okay. It felt, it's difficult to describe, but it felt, the atmosphere kind of felt as though somebody had left something behind. I remember actually saying it when we moved in, that have they taken everything? And it wasn't claustrophobia, but there was definitely something there. And because of my supernatural experience and upbringing, I kind of knew something was there. But what I didn't expect was the boy. So it started with cushions and things being kind of thrown off the sofa and things that you could kind of think, oh, well, that just fell off, you know. And then the occasional book started coming out of the shelf, and I just thought, again, maybe, because at the time my son Fred was about 3-4 years old, so, you know, it could have been him who did it. Anyway, and once I actually heard crying upstairs and then realized that Fred was actually out at nursery. So, anyway, when it really started was when Fred, who, like I say, was about 3 or 4, said to me, "Dad, who is the little person that comes to see me in my bedroom?" I said, "What? Is that a cuddly toy or something?" He said, "No, the little boy who comes in, he comes up to the cot and he looks at me." Huh. And because Fred was like 3 or 4, this was, you know, because you've got a very open mind when you're 3 and 4.
Sure.
And I said, "Well, really?" And so I started to kind of be a little bit concerned. And I told Fred what to do, to kind of imagine some light around you so that you were protected from anything. But then, and this is peculiar, because then I suddenly decided, I thought, okay, well, we've got to have a rehaul on this house. So I went and I decided to pave over the garden.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I paved over the garden, I dug up some of the grass and everything, and underneath I found a box in the soil, and I thought, oh my God, what is this? And it was a box, and it was a wooden box, and I took it out very reluctantly, prized it open, and there were some little bones in there. Now,
oh man.
Now initially I panicked. I thought, oh my God, this all adds up. But then I looked, and it was dog. It was a dog, basically, because it was a dog skull, and it was obviously a little dog that died in the house and been buried there. And thank goodness my panic subsided. But it was after this that things really started hotting up. So things would literally not be thrown, but just be sort of tipped off sofas and things like that. And then it all came to a head when I just thought, I can't do this anymore. And my, you know, I was getting really stressed, and my wife was as well. And it was in the early hours of the morning, I woke up, and coming into the room was a little figure. And I just thought, oh God, this is what Fred was talking about. So the little figure came in, and I woke up and I looked. This is the first time I'd really kind of, it's funny because you don't see it, you sense it.
Right.
And I got up out of bed, and this figure was kind of throwing things at me. He was throwing like little sweets or stones or something, but they weren't real, but it felt like it was pelting me with things. So I was actually telling it off. I was saying, right, get out now, go downstairs, get out now, I'm sick of this. And I was telling it off like it was my own child or something that had been really naughty. And so I remember walking downstairs and him, this kind of little figure sort of throwing things up at me, and yet they weren't real, but they were coming at me. And then he went down to the bottom of the stairs, and then I walked him through very fast. He was backing away into the bathroom, into the kitchen, and it was like, the bathroom backed onto the garden. So I just said, right, get out now, and I opened a window, and I said, right, out, 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 like this. And I shouted, and I remember him jumping out of the window and looking back, and I can kind of see a face that was happy, like I'd forced him out of the place. And then I kind of, everything went grey, and I sort of woke up. And I thought, hold on a minute, that wasn't a dream. I actually did this because my feet were cold in bed. And I thought, you don't have cold feet unless you've been walking about downstairs. So I got up and I was in a bit of a daze, and this was now about dawn or something. Anyway, and of course, guess what? I walked into the bathroom and the window was open. So I'd obviously gone down either in a kind of semi-waking state or I just blanked or something, but I just always remember seeing the boy, or sort of sensing the boy's face, almost waving goodbye and saying thank you and leaving. And it was the most powerful paranormal stroke supernatural experience I've ever had, and I've never forgotten it. And after that, the house did indeed feel a hell of a lot lighter, and I was just very relieved, and I'd done the right thing, and I knew that, and I kind of relaxed. And that is the story of Warbury Road in Wood Green.
Now, that inspired you to write a novel?
Well, yeah, because I always used to think of it. I still do, clearly, because now I'm talking to you. But I still think of this, and I called it in my head Little Boy Blue, because I imagine this little boy who was, I don't think he made it beyond those years. I think that was it, and he wanted to be freed, and somehow he was in the house, and I was bothered that something would happen, but I had to get out of my head somehow. So I've always written stories. When I was younger, I used to get prizes and stuff for stories, but that's when I was younger. So I thought, right, I've got to write a book. And I was writing a book about an old people's home being haunted, and the little boy just basically turned up as I was writing it. He was not actually next to me, but in my head, it was just that I've got to write about him. I even gave him a name, Tom. And so in the book, which is the first novel I've ever written, it's there is Tom in the old people's home, and I won't tell you actually what happens to him, but he was the only way I could get rid of him in my head, really.
Now, important question, where can people find it?
Now you can find him and other very interesting characters, of course, in my debut novel called The Death of Mr. Punch. It's actually, it's been out in the UK and Europe since May, but it's just come out in the USA. It's 1st of October it came out, and the publisher is Peter Owen Publishers. And you can go to peterowenpublishers.com or, of course, Amazon. It's all over Amazon. It's also proving to be very popular on a website called goodreads.com.
Oh, that's great. Actually. That's the high praise. That I've heard that's a tough audience.
Yeah, well, they put reviews there, and they said, really like this book. And I mean, and the weird thing is, you know, having written it, all you did was write it. You did your best, and you're just hoping that it's good. But it's weird when people you don't know read it, and they go, oh, really like this book. And so it's great to see that. And, yeah, Goodreads, they've got something like 92 people waiting to read it or something. And some reviews there, and it's looking really good.
Well, that's so great. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for listening for 10 years, sharing your personal story and where we can find your book and so forth. Thanks again.
Okay, thank you. And I'll listen for a further 10 years.
Alex is a fairly new listener from New York State, and she's a graduate student in college. And she has some interesting stories of hers and her friends about a house near campus. And I'm always fascinated by kind of these college stories. And we have, you know, love to hear younger people listening to the show. That's a great thing. And we're so glad to have Alex on the program. Alex, tell us what happened to you and your friends.
Hi. Yeah. Thank you for having me, Jim. This is a bunch of stories that me and my roommates had from when we were back in undergraduate school, our senior year, actually, the house that we lived right off of campus. It was me and four other girls. Four of us are PT students, and one was a sports management major. That's kind of important because the four PT students all had classes at the beginning, like in the morning, and then the sports management major had her classes in the afternoon. So she would always get ready early in the morning by herself. And that was like where everything really started, was with her. It was about a month into school, and the first thing that she told us that we kind of like got us on edge was that she had a dream one night where she felt like someone was choking her in the middle of the night. And she woke up really suddenly to the feeling that someone was splashing water on her face. And she couldn't breathe for a good couple seconds until she came to.
That's scary.
Realized that, I know, right? And she got her wits about her, kind of got ready in her normal routine and told us about it. And she said everything was fine up until she was making breakfast that morning. No one else was in the house because we were all at class. And she, out of the corner of her eye, she saw something like run down the hallway. And she turned really quick, and she said that she saw a black cat run down the hallway and turn around the corner kind of into the living room area, which was on the second floor. And she, to the point where she really thought it was a black cat. And so she went and looked for it for multiple minutes, looking in all of our rooms, under our beds, under the couch, and couldn't find anything. And later that day, she told us that She told us that story, and we thought it was strange, but also didn't really think too much of it, kind of wrote it off as something weird, but nothing that scared us at that moment. But as the weeks went on, we all my roommates kind of started talking about how they would hear knocking on their doors, like night light tapping at night, and they would call out, ask if anyone was there, and no one would answer. They would hear light scratches on their door at night as well. And this never happened to me. None of the tapping or anything happened to me. But as the months continued along the semester, we noticed that the cabinet doors in the kitchen were opening on their own. We would go to class and make sure they were all closed, and then we would come home after class, and all the like a couple of the cabinet doors would be open. Especially one of my roommates, Caitlin, Doris, like would always be open when we would come home from class, and we don't know why. She eventually started tying a rubber band around it so it would stay closed. But there was actually the next thing that happened was, we were having, you know, five girls living in a house, there's bound to be drama. So we had house meetings in the living room. And in the living room, we had a window that would look into the kitchen, so you could see into the kitchen from our, if you were sitting on the couch. And so four of us were sitting on the couch, and the girl that was having the problem was sitting against the, kind of like against the opposite wall, right next to the window facing into the kitchen, so we could all see. And while she was talking to us and we were having a conversation, that cabinet of Caitlin's just slowly opened, and we all watched it happen. All the windows were closed because we made sure afterwards, and our jaws just dropped. Just the fact that we saw it just open on its own from a latched position was crazy.
That is crazy.
The girl that was talking to us was like, she looked at us like we were not paying attention to what she was saying, and we were just completely captivated by what was happening with the door. And it really got us jazzed and rattled and pretty scared at that point. And something that, you know, we all experienced together. So it wasn't just hearsay. We all saw it. So that was pretty scary. And then the next thing, we don't know if this is related at all, but my roommate Brittany noticed that, she mentioned that she was a sleepwalker. So sometimes she would wake up in the middle of the night, like on the couch instead of in her bedroom. And that was pretty normal for her. But one night we were all asleep except for my one roommate, Caitlin, was upstairs, and she heard this blood curdling scream coming from downstairs, which is where Brittany and my other roommate, Tori, had their bedrooms. Blood curdling, like screaming at the top of her lungs. And Caitlin got so scared, she ran into her room, locked the door. We didn't really act on it in the moment, but found out later, like the next day, that Brittany woke up in her closet screaming at the top of her lungs because she was having a dream that a house was crushing her.
Oh my.
And yeah, she said that she's never had night terrors before, although she has walked around at night. So that was very weird for her. But the weirdest thing was that her closet door and my roommate's headboard were adjacent to each other. They were on the same wall, and Tori never woke up through this ordeal. So we could hear it upstairs, but Tori never woke up at all, which was very strange, like that you wouldn't hear someone screaming pretty much at your head. So
right.
That was another weird thing. We didn't really connect it until much later that was something strange that had happened, but thinking about it now, we were just like, wow. That's definitely not normal. So I think the next thing that happened, so it seemed like things were happening to individual people. And so we all saw the cabinet door open, but every one of us had our own experiences. And the next thing was pretty scary, was that my roommate, Caitlin, so upstairs, there were three bedrooms, and then downstairs, there's two. And me and my roommate, Caitlin, like live down this long hallway and then our other roommate Kathy lives across the hall. But she woke up one morning and we were all in the kitchen. She comes out and she goes, "Was anyone sprinting up and down the hall last night?" And I turned to her and I was like, "No, we didn't do that." And she asked my roommate Kathy and she was like, "No, we didn't do that." And she said that she heard someone sprinting down the hallway and stutter stepping right outside her door and would just stop outside her door. And Caitlin yells out, she's like, is anyone there? And no one answered. And she opens the door and no one was there. And she quickly closes it, locks it, and just gets back into bed. And thought it was us playing a prank, but swear to God, it was not any of us. We were very oblivious, had no idea what she was talking about. So that was another weird thing that happened. She was pretty rattled about. I could see it in her face that she was very scared. The couple nights later, she woke up in the morning and told us another story about how she was watching TV and about to fall asleep. She was on the edge of falling asleep, and she felt something come up from underneath her bed by her feet and kind of grab at her feet in the covers and kind of try and pull the covers off of her bed. And she sat up real quick, turned the light on, and nothing was there. And she ended up sleeping with the light on for the rest of the night because she was so rattled.
I can't blame her. I can't blame her.
I know. At that point, everyone was very scared that, you know, we were going to feel something like that too. But fortunately enough, through the winter months, it died down a lot. But our roommate Brittany knew the people that lived there before, and she went to a party and ran into them, and they asked us how we liked the house and if anything strange was happening. And of course, Brittany didn't want to say anything, so she was like, "No, like we like the house. It's really nice. It's a super cute house." And they're like, "Really? Because we always thought that it was haunted. We would see shadows. The cabinet doors would open. We would hear people banging, or we would hear things banging on the doors." And then Brittany's eyes, she just told us that she just got so freaked out because she didn't prompt any of this at all. And they're coming to her, telling her these things. It just kind of validated that we weren't crazy and that these things we weren't making up in our head. That was pretty, pretty scary too.
Absolutely.
But the last thing that happened that was, I guess, noteworthy was something that happened to me. And it was just me and my roommate, Kathy. And I was in my bedroom folding laundry, and I was watching Friends on Netflix on my laptop. And, you know, I was just folding laundry, and I heard behind me, the doorway to my room was behind me, and I heard like a man's voice kind of clear his throat, like trying to get my attention. And I turn around, and nothing was there. And I could hear Kathy in the kitchen. And I got scared for a couple seconds, but I just kind of validated to myself, it could have been, you know, could have been the show I was watching. I wasn't really paying attention. I wasn't focused on anything. So it could have just been my imagination. So I turned back around and I keep folding laundry. And then no more than a minute or two later, I hear a very deep man's voice yell, "Hey," in the corner of the room right where I'd heard it before. And I jumped, completely stopped folding my laundry and sprinted out of my room and stayed by Kathy's side. I was in hysterics, like trying to tell her what had happened. And she was trying to calm me down, and I ended up like sleeping in her bed that night because I was so terrified. It was just something that I'd never experienced before. And after that, though, you know, we were scared, but everything kind of died down, and we can't really explain why it happened to us or what was going on in the house. But you know, after that, everything died down through the spring, and we never really had any experiences besides like people still thought they would hear like knocking on their door and tapping, but we don't know what it was or anything of that sort. But it was just something that really like made me a believer, because before this, I'm a girl that in high school, I was like the horror movie queen. Like I love scary movies, and I love, you know, I love like the paranormal. I love learning about it. And that's like the type of books I read. It's everything that I like love, but I also never was a believer until that experience.
Well, the thing that I would say, you mentioned you were a graduate student. So obviously you are in, and if it's PT, it's physical therapy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. There's a lot of biology and things. So you're obviously a very intelligent person. And that's the thing is that I have a master's degree. So I have an advanced degree, and there are many people out there who are interested in this stuff that have PhDs and beyond. Yeah. And that's what kind of irritates me, is kind of this stigma that we have. Oh, people that are interested in this stuff and believe in this stuff are a bunch of dummies. And it's kind of annoying and I usually don't cut loose like this, but talking to a young person such as yourself and a graduate student, obviously very intelligent. I hope that I'm a little bit intelligent, and I know there are a heck of a lot of people I've spoken to who are extremely intelligent who are interested in this stuff. Mm-hmm. I kind of really balk at that kind of stereotype that we're all like have, you know, a single digit IQ or something. So I just thought I'd mention that, you being a graduate student and all. And I really thank you for listening to the shows and for stepping out and contributing your story on the campfire tonight.
Yeah, of course. I really enjoyed telling my story. And I think you're right that, I mean, I'm a person that really needs like the hard evidence, you know, those science people, we just need to see it. And I think it was just like, it just validated it even more for me. And I'm all my roommates are PT students too. And it was just something that we all experienced and had to like really see to believe. So I completely agree with you.
Very cool. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
This episode of Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Casper. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. And Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms. They bypass all that, and you earn the savings. Now, I love my Casper. I have one. It's obsessively engineered. It's at a very fair price, and it combines two technologies, springy latex foam and supportive memory foam, to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. And I love it because it's breathable. So you it regulates your temperature. It just feels good. It's my favorite mattress, and from now on, all of my mattresses are going to be Casper mattresses. Now, not only is the mattress itself fantastic, but you can buy it easily online, completely risk-free. And we'll tell you more about that in a minute. But you just go on, you order it from their website, and they deliver it right to you. No messing with, you know, a salesperson in a bad sports jacket, kind of lording over you while you're trying to select your mattress. No, you do it quickly, easily, no muss, no fuss. Because Casper knows you have to try out a mattress in your home to really understand if it's the right thing for you. And they're so confident that you will love your Casper that they do this. And this is unbelievable to me. They offer free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period. So no more lying down in a showroom. Now, Casper mattresses are made in the USA, and you get free shipping and returns to the US and Canada. So you say, that's a lot of good news, Jim. Well, I've got more good news for you. Because they have an outstanding, very competitive price point, but you can save an additional $50 towards a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/campfire and entering the promo code campfire. Again, that's casper.com/campfire and enter that promo code campfire. Terms and conditions apply. I know you'll love them. I love mine. Thanks, Casper. Patricia from Arizona joins us. And actually, the cool thing about Patricia is she has been listening since day one. She listened to the first episode of the Paranormal Podcast, and she's been with us ever since. I think she said she got her first iPod back in 2005. So my, yep. How things have changed. She stuck with us, and she's a Plus Club member and a longtime supporter. We're very appreciative of that. And she has actually two fascinating stories, and she's going to share those both with us. Patricia, thank you for your longtime support, and thank you for telling your stories tonight on the campfire.
Well, thank you for what you do, and I'm thrilled to be here.
So tell us what happened.
Well, the first story is, well, both of them actually involve family, but this one was my grandparents. And I, as a child, probably for 4 or 5 years, I would spend summers with my grandparents up in Montana. I lived there at the time. And I always stayed in the room that we called the music room because they had my mother's old upright piano. And I think it's 1935, and it had always been there. And the room was full of old pictures and family letters, all kinds of things. And every time I would be there, I would have sleepless nights. I would be frightened. My grandmother, yeah, she said, well, you know, maybe it's the old picture album. It was my grandfather's mother's family's picture album. So she'd move it out of the room and say, just talk to them, tell them not to scare you. Well, you know, I was kind of embarrassed about the whole thing, but mm-hmm. Yeah, my family never questioned these sorts of things, so I just kind of let it go. But I think I was about 11, and my little cousin, who was 4, was up there with my aunt and uncle and her baby brother. And there was we're having a picnic out in the backyard. She needed to go to the restroom, so I took her in the house. We were the only people in the house. And as we were coming out of the restroom, we heard the piano playing in the music room. So we went over to look, and the keys were moving. It's not a player piano. I know that. Oh, yeah. So we stood there, looked at each other, and I have to say, we ran out that door, and we didn't know whether to say anything. We mentioned it to my grandmother, and she said, just let it go. And now, here's the part about that. Is, again, she just went in and removed the photograph album. Huh. Took it out of the room. Now, I still have the piano. Never right. had a problem with it. Huh. But my uncle has the photograph album.
And?
He's never said anything. He won't talk about it.
Oh, but he won't talk about it. You know, it's interesting because just recently we did a show, another show. We'd done a show with him before, John Zaffis, The Haunted Collector.
Yeah.
And this idea, right. And this is, and by the way, folks, I don't do a good enough job of this. We have another show called The Paranormal Podcast, and evidently a lot of people don't know that who listen to this show. So I need to do a better job of telling people about that show where I interview authors and experts on the paranormal. But anyhow, John Zaffis went into great lengths, and I actually talked to him about, of all things, my parents had bought a very modest vacation house, and believe me, we were firmly working middle class, but it was a very kind of cheap house. It was almost like, you know, half the cost of a car now. It was very modest, but they had a old diploma in there, like a high school diploma. It was very ornate and very like calligraphy and things. And usually I love old stuff, and that thing, and I was only 10 or 11 years old, but that thing terrified me. And eventually they threw it out. And it was interesting. John said something. I said, yeah, I said, I hate somebody left that behind and didn't take it with him. And he said, did you ever think there was a reason they left it behind? I'm like, oh, I see. He said, yeah, you were a kid. You may have been picking up on something.
I remember that. I listened to that one recently. I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah, because it never occurred to me that there might be a reason. That I just thought it was like the you know, sometimes you look at things and they disturb you and you don't know why. And I just thought it was the way the letters were made. But I love old stuff generally. I could spend hours looking at old magazines or record albums mm-hmm. or things. But just that one thing, just kind of like, ew, I don't even want to go in that room with that thing. Similar to you. It kind of reminds me. Now,
oh, yeah. And the interesting thing. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the photograph or the history behind that briefly. My grandfather's mother came from Scotland with her family when she was fairly young, ran off with an Irishman, and they ended up in Montana, and that's how we all ended up there, I guess. And she died at 23 with her third child, my great uncle, when he was born, right after he was born. And the whole family kind of went back to Scotland, and you know, a couple of them remain. Now, the irony of all of this is, you know, that's the one part of my family I have crazy attachments to. I'm very close now to a second cousin in Scotland I've just gotten to know, and it's been a real integral part of my life. I have a picture of her, of all kinds of things, but I've never had anything else. I've got other things, but nothing of theirs that has been a problem. But I always coveted that photograph album. And then one day I realized, nope, I don't need that photograph album.
They can keep it. They can keep it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you had another story, and this one, yeah, very sad. Tell us about this story.
Yeah, this was kind of an interesting story. Excuse me. I'm doing what you were doing.
Yes, off air, I was coughing.
Yeah, I must be catching it. When I was 21, my best friend, well, we were both 21, my best childhood friend had died in a car accident.
Oh.
And this was very hard. She lived next door. We grew up together. We were both only children. And it was very tragic. And yeah, just, and we went and spent some time. I tried to spend time with her parents even later on. And when my daughter was born, I, you know, tried to let her get to know them. But before that time, she had moved to Missoula, which is one of our university towns.
Sure.
And that's in Montana, and that's where she, it was East Glacier, I think, is where the car accident happened. Now, a couple of years after that, I'd been teaching, and I decided to go back to the university and, you know, get some education and other things. And I decided to live in the dorm. So one night I went to sleep and I had what I thought was a dream that I saw my friend. And she was sitting on a chair by the telephone, and it was, I could really see her. It's like she was impressed in the universe, you know. The room looked like the room, but she was sitting there visiting. And because I thought, well, I'm dreaming, it didn't seem like an odd thing. I wasn't frightened. We talked for a very long time, talked about all kinds of things. So I woke up and I thought, well, that's kind of neat. You know, I tend to dream about people who've died, and this was not abnormal. But I kept thinking it was so vivid. So, you know, that happened, and I just kind of didn't think about it again. So move ahead a few years, and my husband and I had been out of state for a long time. We decided to take a break, go back to the little town where I was raised for a couple of years and just kind of, you know, rejuvenate ourselves. Well, by this time, her dad was gone and her mom was in the nursing home there. And she was in severe dementia at that point. And I would go talk to her and very little response from her. Now, the first time it was kind of interesting. I'd sit there, but she wouldn't even look at me. I went to introduce my husband to her, and she sat there with that same distant look, never talked. She looked up at him and said, and I will bleep my own word, those little girls were little, think of the S word.
Yeah, huh.
And she started talking about my friend and I, and that was it. She kind of went back into it. Well, I started going up trying to get her to talk and spending time with her again in her room, and one day, ironically, not long before she died, she got very chatty, which was kind of unusual. And she said, Callie wants to come and see you. And I kind of went, oh, no, I don't think so. That's not good. And I kind of laughed. Now, mind you, I hadn't talked to her at all because most of the time she didn't even know where she was. She wondered where my house was. You know, she was, so I never mentioned anything to her. I just let her talk. So she starts going on and on. She said, Callie wants to come and see you. And I thought, oh, okay, that's good. And then she turned around, looked at me, and she said, you know, she really enjoyed the visit you two had in Missoula. Mm. And I said, oh, when? She said, well, you know, when you were in school up there. Well, I had not been in school up there when Callie was alive. Oh, the only time I'd even spoken to her was when I had the dream. Now, the irony of this, she went on to describe several things we talked about she would have had no way of knowing. I'd even forgotten them until she brought them up. And she talked at length about, and so that was kind of it. Now, we left and came back to the warm desert soon after that, and she had passed away. So that was the end of that, and I kind of thought to myself, Callie, you don't really need to come and visit me. I don't like being startled like that. But that was the end of that.
You know, you've heard me say this before, but I believe that loved ones, it could be close friends or family members, I think that they do have a way of getting through and kind of getting the message to you one way or the other.
Oh, absolutely. And after my dad died, my mom and I had several interesting experiences knowing he, and most of them were funny, and we knew for a fact it was him. Now, she died a year ago, and she took a long time to come back in dreams or anything, and I had the sense that she had just kind of shut down after she died. She died unexpectedly, and I finally started dreaming about her, and she would be just, you know, no affect, just no reaction. She'd just be standing there. And it took several months to start having her. One day she talked to me and I said, are you happy? And she said, yeah, I think I am. And then I've been finding dimes around. So, you know, that's always a sign. And I thought, well, maybe I'm making it up. And I said, in my dream, do you leave the dimes? She said, yes, I do.
Wow.
So, yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. Every time I'm doing something I know she thinks would be fun, I find a dime in front of me. That so, yeah, awesome. I agree. I think they do come back.
Well, thank you so much. I certainly appreciate you being a part of the program as a listener and supporter since 2005. You deserve what I had an old boss that said that you would get a oak leaf cluster. I think it's like a military thing. Oak leaf cluster for you for that. I thank you so much. And again, thank you for being a part of the campfire.
Well, thank you for being you.
Now, last week, you'll remember we had Rebecca from Liverpool, England on. Always love to talk to people from the UK. Always such great, great stories and great support for the shows. Now, she was telling us some stories about her great-grandfather and some of the spookiness that ensued in his life. And now she's going to bring it down a couple of generations and talk about her dad. Rebecca, welcome back. Now, you had great stories last week, so I can't wait to hear what you have in store this time. Tell us about your dad.
Thank you, Jim. So my family have always lived in Liverpool city centre. I think we're the first generation who haven't. My dad grew up in the Georgian quarter of Liverpool, so it was built in the late 1700s, early 1800s. It's now being knocked down because it was bought by the university in the 1960s, and the student hall's on top of it now and a law library. But in the 1950s and 60s, my grandfather and my lived with my grandmother and my dad and his older brother in one of these very old houses. And they all experienced odd things in the house, but didn't tell each other at the time. So my grandfather, when he came back from the Second World War, worked for the Water Board as a water engineer for many, many years, which meant he'd work very late hours. And on one occasion, he returned to the house very late at night. And as he was downstairs making a cup of tea or something, he could hear very heavy footsteps coming from the attic. Mm. So it was a three-story house. Ground floor had living room and kitchen and things. Second floor bedroom, and then the attic at the top. It was just actually an empty room. My grandmother used to use it to dry washing on rainy days. She had a rope in there. So there was no furniture, there were no objects in there. But nevertheless, he could hear someone walking around. So he just immediately assumed it was an intruder, grabbed his work torch, and pegged it up the stairs. And when he arrived, there was nobody there. And the windows were shut and locked, and you know, there was no way anyone could have come in and out. He'd have had to go down the stairs past him. So the first time it happened, he thought, okay, I've had a long shift at work, I must be imagining things, but it happened a few more times, and he learned that he learned to kind of just ignore it, because he knew that if he went up there, he wouldn't see anybody. He didn't mention anything about this to anybody, because he didn't want, certainly, you know, my dad and his brother were little, he didn't want to scare them, and he didn't want to worry my grandmother, because often she'd be in the house on his own if he was working a night shift. What he didn't know is that my grandmother was also hearing things, but she perceived it in a different way. So she would sometimes be sitting up watching TV or reading. She'd hear a very repetitive kind of creaking sound. And she said the sound to her sounded like somebody rocking in a rocking chair. Mm. Quite rhythmically, you know, that it's quite a distinctive sound, isn't it? And there was an old lady living in the house next door. So she thought, oh, it must be the sound carrying, you know, she must be sitting up, I don't know, knitting, whatever old ladies did in the 1950s. And she, you know, wasn't too bothered. But then the old lady moved out to live with her daughter and the noise continued, even though and my grandmother knew that house was empty. So she realized that it was probably a different kind of sound. She was Scottish and a firm believer in spirits and otherworldly things. So she put it down to it being a ghost, but again, didn't tell anybody because she thought my grandfather would laugh at her. And she didn't want to scare the children, but the children, my dad and his brother, were also hearing things. So they both described to me that they would be lying in bed and they would hear, again, from the attic, a very odd sound, again, a repetitive sound, but to them it sounded different again. It sounded like if you drop a china plate, and it doesn't, you know, sometimes it'll just smash, but if you drop it from not too high a height, it will kind of roll around slowly and then get quicker and quicker and then stop, come to a rest. So that's the kind of noise they were hearing. It sounded like someone dropping a plate, but it would go over and over and over again for hours sometimes. And they knew there were no plates in the attic because, as I said, it was an empty room. And they used to just listen to it for a little while. After, I think after a while they got so used to it, they didn't pay attention to it anymore. And it was only later when I, as I said, the house was purchased by the university and knocked down, unfortunately. They were rehoused elsewhere. And after they moved, where they were kind of reminiscing about the old house. And my, I think it might have been my nana first, who said, well, you know, that was a bit of a strange house because I used to hear this thing. And then, of course, they all brought out their own stories. And I think it's interesting the fact that, I mean, clearly something was going on in the house, something that couldn't be explained. But they were all perceiving it in a different way. It was always a sound, but it sounded different to each of them. And I find that really interesting. I think... I don't have any kind of, I'm skeptic with a small s, I'm kind of agnostic. I don't really know what a ghost might be, but I think sometimes it might be something about a building triggering off a certain response in you. I don't know, I'm not sure, but it was a bit scary for them, but it wasn't dramatic. It was quite everyday, kind of, you know, a strange noise in a house, but clearly something was causing it, and it's interesting you all heard it in a different way. And then my own, the only experience, odd experience I've ever had is actually a little bit similar, because I, many years ago, went to a little village in East Sussex called Rye, and I stayed in a 14th century hotel. It's always been an inn. It's one of these tiny little wooden buildings. And I was there for, it was a long weekend, it was a holiday on the Monday, so I stayed for 3 nights. And on each of the nights, I heard something really strange, which kind of ramped up during my visit. So the first night I was there, I woke up and I was disturbed in the night by someone in the room upstairs moving around. And, you know, it sounded like they were moving furniture. They were making an awful racket. And I was really annoyed and just thought, you know, what are they doing? It's really thoughtless. How, you know, how terrible. People are, maybe they've arrived late, but they're really, they should make an effort to be quiet. But it was a bit strange because it was... It was a very repetitive sound. It sounded like someone moving a piece of furniture, like I pictured like a chest of drawers or something, something quite substantial, kind of being dragged across the floor and then coming to a stop. And then the sound would begin in the same place on the other side of the room again and go across once again and then stop. So after a while, I was thinking, this is really, what are they doing? You know, it's really strange. And I started feeling a little bit odd about it, but, you know, I managed to go back to sleep. And the next day, I realised there weren't any hotel rooms upstairs because being a very old building, it only had 2 floors and I was on the 2nd floor. It was just the attic upstairs. So, yeah, attics are like a recurring theme in these stories. So the noise is coming from the attic space. And I thought, well, at 2 o'clock in the morning, what would a member of staff be doing up there? What do they keep up there? Okay, and I thought, well, you know, strange. The second night, I was awoken at the same time with exactly the same sound happening again. It was exactly the same in all respects. And I started getting really freaked out because I thought, well, it's not a storage space. I can't, I've had a little poke around in the hotel. I thought, you know, I know staff aren't using that room for anything. So what's up there? And it's the same sound happening in the same area. You know, I could kind of picture, if you like, what's happening in which portion of the ceiling. It's the same thing. And so that was very odd. And I, my partner at the time was with me and he was absolutely no help because I couldn't wake him up. So I was the sole witness and just kind of lay there until I eventually fell asleep. The final night, the noise was even louder and there was a different sound with it as well. The, I was over the front, the room I was in was over the main front door of the hotel. And, so the noise in the attic began. But it was also accompanied by a sound of, it was like beer getting delivered in through the front door. So it was, you know, if you've ever seen a lorry unloading barrels of beer, and sometimes they'll, I don't know, in the US it's probably like this in older buildings, but usually there's a beer cellar and they kind of have a special hatch and they roll the barrels in. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what it, exactly what it sounded like. And again, I was thinking, you know, this place is ridiculous. Why are they having a delivery at 3 o'clock in the morning on a bank holiday weekend? It's totally unacceptable, you know. The noise in the attic, I thought, okay, well, that's going on anyway. The noise downstairs. And then I thought, well, actually, a lorry can't get down this street because it's a little tiny cobbled, narrow street. And actually, traffic isn't allowed down this street. So that's not a delivery. And I was lying there thinking, oh, God, what's going on? And all this noise. I mean, you know, it was loud enough to wake me up, not my partner, just me. And I really regret that I didn't just get up and look out the window. The noise went on for a very long, I remember it going on for at least an hour. And it was just, again, the same repetitive sound over and over again, downstairs and upstairs. A lot of activity going on, you know. And I was just terrified and lay awake for a while and eventually managed to fall back to sleep. And I really wish that I had asked the proprietor of the hotel when I was leaving and said, look, you know, did you have some kind of delivery last night? But, I mean, logically, I know at 3 a.m, on a bank holiday weekend while everyone's asleep in the building, they're not going to be having deliveries and it's like physically impossible. So I personally feel as though I was listening to something that happened a long time ago. That was the kind of feeling I had. It used to be a smuggler's inn. I knew that. So I don't know what they were smuggling at that time, rum or whatever. And I think that's probably an interpretation I put it afterwards. It was only, I looked at the history of the place afterwards and read it had been a smuggler's inn because it's quite near the coast. So I thought, well, maybe, they, you know, I was hearing what it was like when barrels were rolling in and they were hiding them. I don't know. but a couple of years later, many years later, I saw the same hotel on a program in England we have called Most Haunted, which is Ghost Hunt.
Sure.
And it's a very entertaining program. I'm not convinced of how scientific it always is. It's certainly very entertaining. But they did spend some time, and they said, you know, this is an infamously haunted building, and, you know, talking about the history of it. I knew nothing about that when I stayed there. Obviously, I knew it was an historic old place, and these places have a certain atmosphere to them. But I'm not particularly credulous. I'm not particularly spooked by old things, you know. So it was, you know, the noise was certainly something I was perceiving. It was loud enough to wake me up. And it was not something I can explain. I wish I'd spoken to the hotel at the time, because maybe it was something really mundane that I'm blowing up out of proportion. But I had a very bad feeling on me about it while it was happening. And it reminded me of what happened to my dad. And that element of repetitive noise, you know, and nothing else, not accompanied by any voices or footsteps, nothing. Just noise of stuff being moved. It was very unnerving. And I think it's the lack of voices as well that really tipped me over. Because if you were having a delivery or moving stuff, you'd have someone say, oh, move it there, put it here. Or, you know, you'd hear someone's voice, right, even if they were keeping the voice low. And there were no human voices. It was just sound, very loud sound.
The thing that interested me, one of the things that interested me about that story is you described the sound above you, and even though that just turned out to be an attic, you know, where it sounds like they didn't do anything or anything, that is a very common theme. A lot of people will report hearing, we've had people who have been on the other end of that. Like, I just came out with my Campfire 5 book, and there's a story in there about a gentleman who lived in an apartment, I believe it was in New York, and down below, the neighbor down below him always complained to the management that he was making all this noise. And it was actually at times he wasn't there or he was asleep. And they said, it sounds like he's dancing and all these different things. And he felt that the apartment was haunted. So, I mean, this is very common where you hear people making a noise where there isn't anybody. This is like, and it's a thing that the reason I believe these stories is that, you know, you have people totally disconnected from other, many times in different parts of the world, and yet they report similar type things. That tells me there's something going on.
Absolutely. I think I'm always interested to wonder whether it's, you know, is it what we imagine, like, you know, a spirit coming in to do something, doing a particular job it used to do or performing an activity, or is it something to do with, you know, I don't know, the physical structure of a building, if it's been lived in for a long time, does something happen in the kind of makeup of the building, which then is there some kind of imprint in the building which you can then, you know, like a tape recorder, they call it Stone Tape Theory, there's an old English program, a film about that, you know, is it just the building physically having an effect on you, or is it an external thing coming in and doing something that you can hear. I find it really, it's really fascinating. I don't know the answer, and it's nice to just wonder about it. I just find it really interesting. So I'm glad I heard a sound rather than saw something, because I'm not sure I'd have been able to cope with seeing someone. But the noise was quite scary enough, I think. You know, certainly thinking back to it, I'm kind of getting goosebumps talking about it.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of our show today. I certainly appreciate it. And last week, and thank you for sharing your stories on The Campfire.
Thanks so much for having me. It's lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
Looking for the perfect holiday gift for that special paranormal person in your life? Check out Jim's series of 5 best-selling campfire books, available in paperback and on Kindle. The books can be read in any order, and each is chock full of spooky stories. Don't forget the True Ghost Story adult coloring book based on The Campfire. They're perfect stocking stuffers, too. Get all the books at Amazon.com. Stay spooky and happy holidays.
Next up on the show is Shelby from Montana. She's a brand new listener and found us from Spotify. We are getting a lot of new listeners from Spotify, so thank you, Spotify. And she's going to tell us about growing up in a haunted house and about a couple of different entities. Shelby, welcome to the show, and please tell us what happened.
All right, thanks for having me. So I just kind of wanted to start, give a little background on my parents' house. It was built in 1869, and it had been, it's been in my mother's family almost since it was built. I'm actually the 5th generation of the family to grow up there, so lots of family history with that. We moved there when I was about 4, and it was right after my great-grandfather had died. But nothing really spooky happened until I was about 12 or 13, and which is actually when I started getting interested in like witchcraft stuff, and I actually considered myself a Wiccan for a year or two during that. The first thing that happened was I began to see a woman standing outside my bedroom door, and she was just kind of standing there staring into my room. And I saw her, like, I feel like almost every single night, just standing there watching me. And she had dark hair that was tied back in a bun, and she wore a long dress with like a white apron, and she looked very like put together, almost like an old timey school teacher. And I would see her all the time whenever I was laying on my bed. And then my little brother also saw the back of her from his bedroom, because it was across the hall from mine. And a couple of my younger brother's friends would also see her whenever they spent the night from his room. And it actually spooked one of them so much that he refused to let my brother leave the door open when he spent the night, because he just, like, he really freaked out whenever he saw her. Usually she would just stand and watch my room, but I do remember one time that she was actually interactive, and I was about 14. Mm-hmm. And I was awake and messing around in my room, and it was like 3 or 4 in the morning. It was way past the time I was supposed to be asleep, and I had actually gotten in trouble a few days prior for staying up all night reading. But I was basically playing dress up with my clothes and making faces myself in my bedroom mirror when I heard like really distinct footsteps heading from the hallway straight towards my bedroom. And like, I immediately thought it was just my mom, and I was had been too loud, and she caught me staying up late. But then the footsteps didn't stop at my door, which was, it was closed at the time. And they just sounded like they walked straight through it. And I could hear like distinct footsteps walk right up to me until I heard them like stop with what I felt was like right next to me. And then I felt like a really cold breeze kind of push me towards my bed. Like, it was strong enough to move my hair a little, and it was, gave me goosebumps. It was so cold. It was just kind of like a time to go to bed. Like, you need to stop it now. And I ended up like, I freaked out and like jumped into my bed and hid under the covers and just laid there. And then I heard the footsteps like really calmly just kind of walk back out of my room. And like, just as calmly as they had come in.
Wow.
And then that was probably, yeah, I freaked out.
Don't blame you. I would too.
Now, the interesting thing about her, like, that was the most interactive thing she ever did. And I actually found pictures of her in like a bunch of family albums. And I found a picture of her and her sister, and their names were Faye and Fern. I don't know which one she was, because the sister just, the picture just said like both of the names of the sisters. But I think she's like a great great aunt or something like that.
Wow. What a story.
Yeah.
Now, it's one of those things is when somebody experiences something like this, and I'm curious about this, you listen to the Campfire Show. Did all of this frighten you? It frightened you? It made you more curious and not as much afraid? Because some people, if they experience something like this, wouldn't listen to a show like The Campfire because this stuff would scare them. What's kind of your viewpoint on all of that?
It scared me when it was happening. And I always like, I always get scared when anything ever happens to me, but it always like makes me way more interested in it after. So after stuff started happening with the woman, I looked way more into it. I read a bunch of books about ghosts, and it made me a lot more interested, even though I was really scared when it would happen.
Now, there was another entity, wasn't there?
Yeah. So I feel like I should start this part of the story and kind of explain. My older sister was also really into witchcraft and stuff, and about the same, like when she was 13, 14. But she was a little more fearless about it than I was. And she actually she told me she used a Ouija board and did seances with friends and that sort of thing, like in our house. And she said she did those things in both my room where I saw the woman and the bedroom right next to where that was. And that actually, I moved into that room after she had done the Ouija board stuff. And I think I was like about 17 when I moved into that room. When I first moved into that room, I was just basically in a constant state of panic when I was in that room, just because I hated being in there because it had a super oppressive feeling to it. And like, I had a horrible time sleeping. Just everything about the room just felt evil type thing. And it like started out, I just felt really uneasy, but then I started noticing that if I stayed up until about 3 a.m. because I was really bad about staying up late when I was younger. I'd have like almost panic attacks between 3 a.m. until like the sun came up, and then I would feel safe again.
Mm.
And then I think the first thing that really happened that like made me kind of sit up and be like, oh, something's going on, is I had a dog that would sleep in the room with me, and he would sleep in my bed. And he woke me up one night when he was still kind of a puppy, and he was snarling and barking at something in the corner of the room.
Oh boy.
Like he looked like he was about ready to attack whatever he was seeing. And he was still a puppy at that point. He was a very sweet dog, but his hair was standing on end, and like he would not look away from the corner even after I turned my light on.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up waking me up like three different times that night, like just snarling at the corner. Just freaking out. And then I really don't think whatever was in that room was a good spirit, like, or entity. I've always referred to it as a demon just because it seemed to fit, because it just felt really dark and evil to me. And then one time I woke up in the middle of the night and it felt like something was holding me down on the bed. Like I couldn't move. I was fully awake. And I remember panicking and reaching for my dog like he could help me before it like let me go and I could sit up. And then like I had to sleep with the lights on that night.
Oh boy.
And then there were a few other times. Yeah. There were a few other times I felt like something was touching me when I was laying in bed, like grabbing at my arms and feet. And a few times, like it only happened once or twice, but I would see like kind of a dark figure.
Oh my.
Standing over the bed. But then if I blinked or like even did a double take, it would disappear almost immediately. And so I ended up sleeping with the lights on a lot during my late teenage years, 'cause it seemed to help a little bit.
Don't blame you.
And then, the worst part of it wasn't the feeling of it like being evil, I guess, 'cause that eventually went away for me. But not like the demon guy didn't go away. It felt like he started to like me and it started doing things for me. Like I would lose a hairbrush and I'd look all over my room for it, check my whole vanity area and not see anything. And if I just sort of turned away for a minute and just kind of said out loud, man, I really wish I could find my hairbrush or something like that. And I'd wait for a second or two and I would like 80% of the time I would turn around and it would be sitting like in the middle of my vanity, right where I'd looked like 2 seconds prior. And it would just be it would be exactly where it was supposed to be, when like a place I'd already checked. But it still didn't seem to like other people, because my mom told me and my sister's story of like, I had already left for college at that point, and she went to go to sleep in my room because she said my dad was snoring so loudly that she couldn't sleep. So she went into my room and was asleep, and she said she woke up because she felt someone's hands around her neck and it was trying to strangle her. And she said she couldn't breathe, and she had to very forcefully think like, get the F away from me, and like very like mentally push it away before it let her go. And like I kind of was separated from it for the first few years of college, but then it seemed to almost realize where I was. And then like the last year, my senior year of college, things started happening. Like I'd lose something, and if I said something out loud, it would turn up almost immediately, and that sort of thing. And things like that kept happening for a really long time. And actually, they stopped almost immediately after I met who is my husband now. And like, since I've known him, nothing has happened to me at all.
Well, I want to tell you, I thank you so much for listening. I certainly appreciate it. So glad that you found the podcast and you took time to share your stories. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that version of the campfire as much as I did. And see, I promised no politics. So anyhow, I hope you have a great week. I hope you'll tell a friend about the campfire. Maybe show them on their phone and say, hey, look, you can subscribe to this stuff for free. You can get these free spooky stories. And there's so many apps on Android and Apple now. There's really no excuse not to listen. So please do tell a friend. We thank you so much. We hope you have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. And as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.